From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, which is really becoming the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And we're using this Backyard Advantage at our venture capital firm, Growth Factory Ventures, to really engineer wins for our portfolio, for our investors, and really for the entrepreneurs of our region. So you don't really have to be directly affiliated with the Growth Factory to know that you have a friend in entrepreneurship with the Growth Factory and with the Mark Haney Show. And today, oh, by the way, if you like our concept, we just, I think, passed 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. But if you like what we do, please follow, please like, follow me on Instagram at TheMarkHaney, follow our YouTube channel, subscribe to it, and be sure to share it with your friends, because if you want to talk about local innovation, local entrepreneurship, or be around those kind of talks, you got to tune into our show. So with that said, today on the show, we have something really interesting and unique in a man named James Kubel. He's the founder of JK Engineering and Electric, and he is an entrepreneur, he is an innovator, and he is blind. He had to get some help from his son Garrett in getting up the stairs, step to my office. And when I first met him, he was with Dave Routon, former CEO of Safe Credit Union, and those two are friends. And so he ends up needing to get navigation, but yet, how does he build these businesses? How did he do it? And so we're going to learn what that story looks like. So welcome to the show, James.
Oh, pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you don't mind, maybe give me and our audience a little bit of a look into your background. How did you become involved in engineering? How did you decide to become an entrepreneur? Maybe walk us through that journey a little bit.
Well, I guess it really started when I was 15 years old. I wanted to drive. I had sight then. And my dad said, you know, I wanted to buy a car. And I wasn't even old enough to drive yet. And he said, I'll tell you what, if I help you get this car, the car can't run. And so you have a year to get it going. And so that's what I did. I didn't know anything about auto mechanics at the time, but I found out I loved it. And by the time I went to take my license at 16 years old, it was up and running great. Well, I developed this passion for mechanicking, just working on cars. But that wasn't my goal. My goal was I wanted to be an engineer who designed automobiles. And that's how I started. That got me down the track of engineering. I set my goals to get certified as a mechanic and go ahead and go to engineering school. And of course, somewhere in this story is my blindness. And that's really what derailed my goal.
Okay, well, let me stop for a second and ask a couple of questions.
Shoot.
What kind of car was it?
My first car?
Yeah.
Was a little Datsun 510.
510, what year?
1969.
69 Datsun. And how old were you? You were 15 at the time.
I was 15 years old.
And so how old are you now?
I am 60.
You're 60. Okay, so you're not that much different. You're a couple years younger than me. So you're 15 back then. That was everybody wanted to get a car and drive. And
exactly.
So your dad, though, sounds like a really wise man in the idea that he put the challenge ahead of you to see how bad you really wanted to drive.
Right. And I came up to the table, and obviously the car had a lot of problems. I had to rebuild the transmission and carburation and things like that back then. But it, you know, I was always good with my hands. I loved working on things with my hands. And, you know, I knew I was going to head down that path in my career someday. And because of the love for cars, which even today, I fix a lot of people's cars. It's just something I do as a hobby, not as a profession. But my goal at the time was to get my certs in, you know, as a certified mechanic, and be able to work in the trenches before I went and designed these things. And that's what was in my mind at that time. But I never, obviously, I never reached that goal. You know, I did my pre-engineering while I was taking automotive classes, but that's when I started having visual trouble. So, you know what? Trust and adjust. You know, things change. So did I. And, you know, but I really had a very strong passion for engineering, and I still have that passion today. And, you know, I started a corporation in 2000 to actually help the blind, because I'd lost my sight, but I was an engineer at heart.
Well, if you don't mind, how did you lose your sight? What happened?
I lost my sight from diabetes. I was born at age 4. I developed type 1 diabetes, and back then, you know, the ratios of type 1 diabetics were like 1 in 10,000. I mean, I didn't know another diabetic. I truly didn't. And the technology wasn't very good then either, you know, but I'm very fortunate. Yes, I have the disease, but I take well care of it. And the casualty was my vision, but the rest of me does pretty good, you know. And, you know, that is something that's part of me, and it's led me down some paths as well.
Is it the type of thing that came on gradually? How did that, how old were you when you first started feeling like you had eye problems? And then how long did it take to progress to the point where you can't see anything now, right?
Right. I'm total. I started in 86. I had some trouble with my right eye, and I went in.
And at that age, you were probably early 20s.
Yeah, early 20s. And then, of course, I went in for multiple surgeries, and I lost that eye as far as vision.
Okay.
And then it wasn't until 29 that I lost the left eye. And same kind of deal. I went through 5 surgeries on the eye, and I had less than a drop of blood. I had a small blot hemorrhage in the eye, and less than a half a drop of blood wipes out vision. And they said, well, you know, you look good. Your retinas look pretty good. That should have absorbed. And you should be off and running. Well, it never did. Mm-hmm. It actually, the blood turned opaque, and it put a traction on my retina, which is the part that senses light at the back of your eye. And then I ended up with retinal detachments, and the story just goes from bad to worse there. But at the end of it, I was left total.
And then, maybe walk me through the emotion. Were you angry, sad? What kind of emotions?
Depressed, above. You know, I call it my 7-year pity party, because for the next probably 7 years, it was poor me, right? But finally, I decided, you know what? I got to do something. I got to get back on the horse. That's when I started looking around at what I could do, you know. And I was, you know, I needed to make a living, you know, at the same time. So I went and I got help at the Orientation Center for the Blind, and that's in Richmond, or close to Richmond.
In the Bay Area.
And, you know, I went to the school. I spent 9 months there. Actually met my wife there, and we left there and you know, lived in an apartment, and of course, you know, started a family and those kind of things. During all of that, you know, I needed to make money to support my family. So,
but was your wife a student or a patient, or was she somebody who has good vision and she just worked there?
No, she's blind as well.
Okay,
total.
So two total blind people marry each other.
Right.
Huh, interesting.
And of course, we at the time I was looking for work, and I found a business partner And together with him, we co-founded a corporation called Access Solutions, which was designed to build products for the blind that would help the blind. And, you know, it wasn't what my original goal was, but I got to use my chops in engineering. So that was great for me, you know, and we started to develop products. And some of those products, you know, one of the products that we developed was called the DeckTalk USB, and it was a text-to-speech synthesizer that was designed to help a blind person use a computer. You know, you punch keys on the keyboard, and it would echo back speech, so you could understand and navigate a computer.
Hmm.
Well, I still use the device I designed today. That's how I'm able to still work as an engineer.
All right, tell me how this works, this device. This is interesting. So you type on the computer and it tells you whether what keys you're hitting? Or
yeah, if you hit the letter A, it'll echo back A.
Okay.
You know? And of course, you got to learn a bit on your own. You got to realize it's very helpful if you know how to type,
yeah.
Right? If not, then you got to learn to type. But, you know.
Did you already know how to type?
I wasn't good at it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I learned to type good. You know, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, I had to adjust. And I've done several designs by using a text-to-speech synthesizer. But I think the highlight of my career was that device was designed for the blind. But I got a call from the FAA. And they wanted to use the device, you know, for their flight simulators, as well as in their control towers, and that's what pivoted from a product that I had designed to help the blind, but ended up going down a whole different pathway with companies like the FAA, Lockheed Martin, U.S. Steel, different companies that had another use of my product. Mm-hmm. And of course, I did a special design for the FAA. And, you know, I find it kind of funny because often, you know, I've tried to find employment and, you know, people are, you know, taken back that I'm actually blind, but they'll go get on a plane and fly somewhere and the safety of their flight was in the hands of a blind engineer.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I have a slogan. I'm not wearing my shirt today, but it says everything is figure outable. I have this, I guess, mantra that if you have enough imagination, enough inspired action, and enough stick-to-itiveness, we can figure out anything. And I think you've obviously figured out some really amazing things, and yet you've got this what most people would call this severe disability. Tell me about the biggest challenges associated with being blind. Obviously, getting employment can be a challenge, but maybe walk us through the things that maybe those of us that just can't put ourselves in your shoes, the things that you have to go through, and then maybe is as well, like, are there any, has it created any advantages in any way for you? Have you discovered a way to, like, reframe it? So reframe your condition.
Well, I kind of think of myself, you know, I'm a visionary, right? I mean, I was a very visual person before I lost my sight. And after losing my sight, I'm still a very visual person. In fact, when I do design work, I paint the picture in my mind. I reference the picture in my mind. And that ability has evolved for myself, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I do it. And, you know, I think, you know, two words you probably rarely hear me say is, I can't.
Hmm.
Whereas I meet so many people that, oh, I can't do it. A famous one, people says, well, you can't drive. That's not true. I can drive. not legally, but I can get behind the wheel. I can work a clutch. I can work the gas pedal. I can work the brake. It's not safe, and a lot of people won't want me doing it. Mm-hmm. But don't tell me I can't.
Yeah.
And I kind of take that approach in almost everything I do. You know, when I did my graduate work for my master's, you know, the college said, well, maybe, have you ever thought about doing something maybe in music or, you know, a different field? You know, and, you know, constantly in their mind, it was, I can't. There's no way you could do this. But for me, that's kind of my gift.
People were trying to steer you toward things that are more audio oriented.
Exactly.
Because you think about Stevie Wonder or Ray Charles, famous musicians that have maybe even had more creativity and, you know, because they were able to focus in an area like their music. And it makes you sort of wonder, like, is there, it kind of makes sense.
We can always hear music but I think, you know, coming back to what you were asking me is it's like a blind person doesn't hear better. You know, that's not really true. Their hearing is more acute. It's like, I'll be in a store and somebody will drop change and I'll go, oh, you dropped a quarter. Mm. Well, how'd you know? You know, well, or a penny. Well, it resonates at a different frequency. My mind knows what that is. And the first time, yeah, it was a little tough, but I don't even think about it. I just say, you dropped a quarter, you dropped a penny. You know, your hearing is more in tuned to what you're actually hearing, you know? And as we hear things, there is a lot of noise, right? But I'm forced to have to pay attention a little more than the next guy. It's like if I walk outside to, you know, grab the trash can and haul it into my home, I'll listen for it. Well, how do you listen for a trash can? Well, the ambient noise, if I get in that void spot somewhere close, it will block that ambient noise in a way that
I can pick
up. Wait a
minute, when you listen for the trash can?
Yeah, you listen for the trash can.
Because the trash can's big enough to block some noise.
Some noise. Well, it's not something that I was taught. You know, in so-called, quote, blind school or however you want to phrase it. But it's things like that that you pick up on that most people would never give it the time of day to think about it, right? And a lot of times, you know, I rely on those things. I don't even think about it. You just get used to doing it. When you're in the program to get training, they took me and dropped me out in the middle of San Francisco, said, okay, meet us back at the orientation center. We'll give you 5 hours. Well, that was all done by navigation. Cane travel, listening. Huh. If I had a chance to talk to somebody, and white cane travel. And it's all based on sound, the tap of the cane. And I could hear the you know, cross traffic. I can hear parallel traffic. You develop a sense of hearing that you end up relying on.
As a society, there's all kinds of, like, you got those truncated domes as you go into the little yellow like bumps in the road before you walk out in the street that are designed to sort of tell your feet, tell your cane that you're walking out into traffic potentially. What are the good things that we have done? What is there some stuff that maybe we don't do that we ought to do?
Well, that's kind of a tricky question because somebody came up with an idea that, you know, really help the blind if the lights would beep when they're going a certain direction, which is a good idea. You think about it. I hear the beep, then I know
I'm going north or south or whatever.
Right. Yeah. I should start walking. Mm. Here's the bad part about it is it might beep, but it doesn't tell you a damn thing about a car that is coming along that's running the intersection, does it?
True.
So those lights have hurt a lot of visually impaired people because they're focusing on the sound of the light, not on the sound of the traffic. And I was taught that don't pay attention to the beep. Pay attention to the traffic. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody was trying to help, and it's appreciated. And, you know, especially at a noisy intersection, right? But the truth is that, you know, for somebody that's visually impaired, their ears are very important, and they need to be able to trust them. And, you know, I've had people tell me, oh, it's okay to go, and then all of a sudden I hear them scream like, oh, my God, I almost ran you right in front of a car. I said, you don't have to worry about it because I wasn't paying attention to you. I wasn't paying attention to what I was hearing.
There are obviously audiobooks, but there's also Braille. I mean, before there were audiobooks, you could use Braille to read things. Did you get familiar with that?
Yeah, I was taught Braille. I wouldn't say I'm an expert Braille reader. And the people that I found that are really good at Braille are young kids that they need to learn their ABCs. And I had learned that in my life visually. I'm more of a text-to-speech guy. You know, that's kind of the way I roll. I use Braille for labeling things. And I will Braille things, for that purpose. But, you know, I'll put on an audio book rather than order the book in Braille. Now, the one thing about it that people don't realize, you take a simple magazine, to convert that into Braille, that end up way bigger than a big, thick phone book, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's very bulky. And, you know, it is very useful, but at the same time, it's very bulky. And for that reason, you know, I think the digital world we live in today, a lot more blind people use text-to-speech and
Yeah, and I still imagine that kind of technology that wasn't necessarily built for blind people specifically, you know, podcasts and mm-hmm. you know, just the fact that we have really good audio and a lot of things come out in audio now because a lot of us want to, you know, listen to it or multitask, or maybe, you know, we're not as good at readers, but we can still listen pretty well. It's kind of interesting. So that would be, I would think, a big benefit for somebody that was blind. And I was also thinking before the show that AI and video is associated with AI might be presenting opportunity for almost like helping you see, especially since you can imagine what things look like. You could potentially point a camera at something and it might describe it audibly to you so that you basically you got a set of eyes out there talking to you. Is there anything like that?
Yeah, there is. There's by Microsoft Scene AI, okay. And it's an app, and you know, it'll tell you, you know, there's three people in the room, and it'll try to describe them, and as well as if there's some text, you know, and you ask it to read it, it'll read the text. You know, there are, you know, more and more tools that are useful every day. They even have an app called I'm trying to remember the name, Be My Eyes. Mm. And I've used that app in an airport where I was trying to catch a plane and I didn't know where my gate was. So I'm walking around myself with my white stick and I call this app, and on the other end of the app is somebody with sight. I pick up my phone, they're like, okay, point your phone at straight ahead and keep walking forward, and what's on your left is such and such, and what's on your right. And they led me to my gate all by an app.
Wow. So you mentioned one of the challenges is finding employment. Now, you're an entrepreneur. You own an electrical contractor, which is sort of amazing, where you can go out and work on, circuit breakers at somebody's house. You can wire a home. You can do these kind of things. And yet you're talking about potentially going to work for somebody. Talk to me about how do you decide that as a as a 60-year-old person, you're trying to make those kind of decisions. Do I want to be an employee? Do I want to build a business? What goes into that decision-making process?
Well, I guess the big question is why did I open up an electrical contracting business?
Okay.
And the reason is that, you know, I told you this all began when I was 15, that, you know, a tinkerer, and that moved into me working in construction to help myself through college. And one of the jobs that I had working through college was I became an electrician. And I always thought at that time, I said, wow, I enjoy being outside, but also it's pretty easy for me to make an income, mm-hmm. you know, fixing people's electrical problems. So when I had difficulty, you know, finding employment as an engineer because of the biases that exist there, I knew one area that I could make money at, that, you know, I could do well at, and that's why I started my electrical business, because I could draw and work quickly. Now, that was a hard sell, trust me, but I ended up, you know, getting some guys to work for me and developed a small company to put food on the table. Mm-hmm. It never was my ultimate dream, you know, and that's why, you know, my true passion is designing products and circuits, but the electrical business has been a way to keep afloat, and I do enjoy working with customers and that part of it too. So, but like I say, sometimes it's a hard sell, because the last thing somebody expects to see is their contractor to walk in with a white stick,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about, maybe for our audience and for me too, is like the principles associated with designing something. You design things that are electronic, it sounds like, for the most part.
Right, correct.
Do you have like core principles that you fall back on that are like always part of your design? If you were to, you know, teach a class on building stuff, what kinds of things are like the core?
All my designs are very modular, and I break things up into blocks. Block one, block two, block three. Any problem I'm trying to solve, that's kind of how I approach it. Now, of course, how do I put the blocks together, and what goes in the blocks could be many things. But I try to approach any type of that kind of problem with kind of a top-down solution. You know, this is what I've got, this is what I need to get it to here, and that's what I'm trying to achieve. What are going to be the blocks involved? And I'll actually type it out in like a simple notepad to start with, you know, writing some comments, number one, what am I trying to achieve? Mm-hmm. Number two, how am I going to get there? And then when it, you know, one of the things that
when you write it down, how do you go back and review it?
Same way, you know, they have what's called a screen reader. And this is a piece of software that all it does is that it rips the text off of the screen that you point to and sends it off to my text-to-speech synthesizer that I developed.
Mm.
And I can give keyboard commands to read anything on the computer and send it to the text-to-speech synthesizer. And if it's a sentence, it'll just read the sentence.
Okay, so I interrupted you. Blocks, okay, write it down.
Sounds
basic. Now, these are things that are, I guess, universal in terms of process. Whether someone's blind or not, these are important things to be considering.
Well, that's how you would do it too, right? Yeah. You break things down.
I would just get a team to help me do it.
I would too. But in the simple form, we try to break problems down into smaller pieces that we can handle easier, and then we end up putting them all together and hopefully have our solution. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I think in my mind, and it's no different from whether I have sight or not. I often, you know, I've talked to colleagues, and, you know, a lot of the engineering industry uses simulators. It's a big part of the industry today. And to me, I said, well, so you're using a tool. You need the data to be converted into some pretty format for you to look at. I beat you to the punch. I just grab the data. Mm-hmm. And I analyze the data. Do I need, you know, people have said, well, how are you going to do this? You can't see the graphs. I don't need the graph. I got the data. Mm-hmm. I can figure out a standard deviation or the mean or all the stuff you look at to figure out. I can still get that information.
What about in terms of designing form factor? So you design something that somebody wants to, let's say, take out of the box and plug in and make it work. We all know the iPhone is very visually, everybody likes the design of the iPhone because not only its functionality, but it looks good. It's cool. And
right.
That they put a lot into the visual design of that. Do you, if you were to make something, do you have other people do that part of it, or can you feel like are there certain design elements that you utilize as well?
Well, I'm pretty picky. I mean, I like the iPhone because of part of it. It's sleek feel, but you know, it's like I look at cars and. You know, I can feel the fenders. I can feel the lines in the car.
What kind of phone do you like? You don't like the iPhone, it sounds like.
No, I do.
Oh, okay.
In fact, that's the phone I use.
Okay.
But, you know, those kind of things, yeah, probably I would definitely have a colleague, mm-hmm. you know, look at it. But I don't need the colleague to tell me what it looks like. Uh-huh. You know, I can definitely. And if I have ideas, of course. Then I would talk it over with colleagues and stuff. But, you know, it's, you know, our tactile, a lot of people don't use feel as much as they use vision. I mean, a good example of that is, you know, everybody's got a junk drawer in their home.
Yeah.
And I can get items out of that junk drawer that you need quicker than anybody can with sight.
Huh.
Because I don't need to feel the whole screwdriver. If I feel a little piece of it that feels like the handle, I grab that sucker, pull it out.
Yeah.
People got to move everything around and look at it. And that is something, if I were to see tomorrow, I would take that feature. I learned, you know, because it's a way of, it causes you to think different. And I come back to the fact that I believe I'm a visionary because I do use my visual cortex a lot. It's just in a different way. And, you know, it's served me well. It served me well.
In terms of technology, obviously you're a technologist, you're an engineer, and we've seen things really improve fast, I think in a good way, for somebody who's blind or for somebody who's not blind. We all have these tools. But with AI, things are changing more rapidly in terms of, you know, processing speed and just like the whole way that we build electronics and think about how electronics are going to work for the long haul. And I'm sort of curious as to what do you envision in terms of technology and how that might affect the way you design something in electronics?
I think a lot of it would be. The part I'm interested in is what kind of tools could come out of that that could actually help a guy like me, mm-hmm. right? I mean, one of the biggest problems is let's take the internet, right? It evolves on a daily basis, or probably per hour, right? Mm-hmm. It evolves very quickly, and there's software out there that will. Do exactly what I mentioned before, strip the text off, you know, an area that you're focused on and send it off to my synthesizer. Well, that's not one size fits all. It changes rapidly. But with some AI, I think it could change with it much better and allow someone like me to navigate parts of the internet better, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I feel pretty strongly I do a pretty good job, but there's always room for improvement. That's one area I think AI could really help. And the people that write these screen readers, guess where they're looking right now? AI, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, electronics, software, those kind of things, we're evolving quickly, you know, and right now there's a big race against, you know, being able to keep up with, as far as speed, you know, and memory, you know, for these very huge AI systems. And, you know, not to mention we got quantum computing on the back burner too. It needs technology to evolve, and that's always going to be the case.
Are right? those technologies exciting for you, or do they? So some people look at some of this technology and it causes them to feel fearful. How do you does it feel opportunistic for you?
I'm probably right down the middle. Yes, I feel that it could really help on some levels, but I have the same fears that other people have. You know, I don't know, you know, like the self-driving cars, right? That's interesting to me. And hey, I don't need to get a driver's license if all I have to do is get in the car and tell it where I want to go. But at the same time, it's a trust issue, right? Hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, and I'll, as an engineer, I also recognize that we got to beta test these a lot. And in so doing, there's going to be some crashes.
Right.
Well, I don't want to be on that one. You know? You know, but there's a price we pay for the technology, you know, and I want to be on the side of technology that it helps my community. I don't want to be on the opposite side where somebody is using it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. You know, and thinking about somebody that might be listening and thinking about partnering with you or hiring you or something like that, obviously you bring a lot, but you've, I would imagine there's some things that maybe you're not going to do as well. Does it take you long? It took you a little bit longer to get up to my office. You needed help, that kind of thing, which is, I mean, I'm impressed because you've been here before. You remember how it was laid out pretty well. But still, some of those things, especially as you're learning them for the first time, I could see it maybe taking a little bit longer. Are there other things like that that are sort of like, I don't know, kind of cons?
Well,
If I
came to your office a couple more times, I to find your stairs, I'd tap around and find them. Yeah. I'd be up here really quick.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of, and that's very typical for blind people. Once I have a layout, you know, I probably wouldn't even use a cane or walk around here. Yeah, that's what I do.
Do you feel
at
like
home.
People discriminate against you for that at some level? Because obviously, your first time, you're going a little slower, and so maybe people are stereotyping you or something like that.
Well, and it's fair to say too, I took a really bad fall many years ago down two flights of BART stairs.
Oh, geez.
And I was using a guide dog that took me off the top, and stairs still to this day. You know, make me a little nervous, but once I find a railing or something, I go up and down them like anybody else. It's, you know, you're a product of, I guess, your environment. Mm-hmm. You know, I took a bad fall, and that, as much as I've tried to shake it, but once I learn a place, I mean, you know, in my home, I don't run around with a cane or anything. You know, I rely on my ears, you know, and in other offices I've worked in, you know, first few days I ran around with a cane. After that, I put the cane in the corner and walked around the office. So that's just part about learning your environment, you know, and things like that, you know, in relationship to your real question is do I find myself slower or, you know, as far as performing work and things like that. The truth is in the beginning, you know, like even in graduate school, the rest of the students didn't have to develop their own adaptive equipment to get the material of the class. I did. And so in the beginning, they were getting their projects in quicker than me. But once I got up to speed, you know, I took the high in every class and I got the projects done before anybody else in the class. So, you know, yeah, it might take me a little bit longer coming out of the gate. But once I've aligned myself, I'm very competitive. Mm-hmm. And I even enjoyed the competitiveness of it. That's kind of what makes me roll, right?
You like the challenge.
I like the challenge. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, those colleagues went on into industry. And who do you think they call when they get stuck in their jobs? They call me.
Interesting.
And I help them with their bugs. You know, so, you know, it's, I just do it a different way, you know, but I'm up for the challenge.
So your son, Garrett, brought you today. Mm-hmm. Dave, who I mentioned, Dave Routon, brought you out here the other day. And so I'm wondering, like, who do you have, like, the most gratitude towards that are sort of been by your side through this journey? And then maybe who's challenged you the most? Who are these people? Well, what kind of people are they?
Well, this is a good question. You know, obviously, you know, Dave has been very helpful to me. And one of the reasons I believe that is so is I can't say he identified with me as much as it almost became personal, that the resistance I've gone against with society of acceptance, you know, because at the end of the day, I don't want to be treated any differently, you know, and, you know, Dave has been, you know, I call him my wingman, you know, because he enjoys, you know, helping me with things as far as the business world, because, you know, he was, you know, the CEO or president of Safe, and I've always been in the trenches with electronics, so I admire him because he's taught me quite a bit about business, and mm-hmm. I'm always, you know, even coming out and meeting with you guys more on the business side of things, that's excited me because I feel it's an area that I'd like to learn more about, right? I am an entrepreneur, and, you know, like I said before, I think I'm a visionary. And really what I'm looking for is, you know, I've been turned down a lot as far as employment opportunities. And I never walked away, I don't think, for the most part, angry. I just felt, you know, the person I need to meet is a visionary. I think outside the box. And some people are not comfortable with that. But over and over in my life, I have came up with solutions that a lot of people couldn't. And it's because I do. Mm. I think outside the box. I'm forced to. And I've gotten good at thinking outside the box because I have to. So
yeah, interesting.
That's kind of my highlight. You know, when I went to graduate school, you know, the professors that I spoke with first, I said, hey, you know, I'm a blind guy, you know, and do you... can you give me an idea of some of the software that you were going to use repetitively? And one of the programs they came up with was MATLAB. They said you got to use that program a lot. So I got a copy of MATLAB. Well, guess what? It's not accessible to the blind.
Hmm.
So I called MathWorks, who produces this program, and I said, hey. Number one, do you have an accessible version for the blind? They're like, are you crazy? No. So I said, can you give me a hook into the engine of this program? And they said, no. And I said, well, wait a minute. You know, don't you want to be able to sell your product to people that are visually impaired? Well, eventually, after several conversations, they said, yeah, we'll give you a hook. Well, I wrote a program so I could access this program with my text-to-speech and use it. I use that all the way through my graduation program.
That's amazing.
I found a solution. And so many times with other people in my field, they just stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. And that's part what drives me. You know, like I said, I wasn't ready to accept I can't. You know, that's not the way I roll.
So your dad challenged you when you were 15. How did that relationship? He sounds like he might have been a little bit of a hard ass. Is that?
Yeah,
just...
that's pretty clear.
Yeah,
but he was a business guy, right? Okay. You know, he owned retail stores, and I knew that wasn't my gig. I tried it. I tried working in those stores.
What kind of stores were they?
They were women's clothing stores.
Okay.
And he loved it, and he was great at it, you know, but he wanted me to get involved in it and maybe take over some of the business at some point in my life. And I couldn't get further away from it. Mm-hmm. I had no interest.
Go build stuff. Yeah. Design stuff.
So he ended up hiring me at one point to be his repair guy. So I'd go out and fix, you know, toilets and electrical problems at his stores, which was fine for me. That's what I like to do. I was a tinker. So it all worked out. But yeah, he did challenge me with the car thing. And I don't know. Sometimes I think, all right, if you're working on that, you'll be out of my hair. So
yeah. Who challenges you the most today? Sounds like you challenge yourself, but besides you.
That's a good question. I can't say I really have probably some of the other engineers I know. You know, we're always looking at something to design, and
people that know your capability,
right?
And so they put you to the test. Do others in society, or that you don't know as well, are they a little more careful with you because they don't, you know, we're all careful with people when we first meet them, but people that know you sometimes challenge you the most.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, I know when I had lost my sight, you know, my mom's a good example, right? You know, she would have things that she needed repaired around the house, and you know, she'd call me up and more asking, do you know somebody that can help me out? I said, well, I'll come over and do it. Like, I remember she needed a ceiling fan put in. And she says, well, you think you can do it? I'm like, come on, Mom. I put tons of these things in. But she was, on one level, she knew I could do it, but at the same level, she had to ask the question. And I think, you know, I'm long past taking it as an insult. You know, I think others would, you know, when people bring me their car to fix it, sometimes they'll say, are you sure you're going to be okay with it? Get out of here. You know, because, you know, number one, I don't like to get beat. And number two, usually those people get in my way more than they ever help me, because I want to get my hands in there and get it fixed. So, you know, but most people that know me, you know I'm very stubborn and I won't give up on it. And also know that it'll be done right if they give it to me, you know, so that's kind of, it's a high bar to reach, but I always like reaching for the high bar.
Love it. Okay, so two more questions here. Very intrigued by this whole conversation, but what did I not ask you? Because I have to imagine there's something out there that is I let slip by because I just sort of scanned over parts of your life.
Well, yeah, we did kind of the quick pass through my journey, and I don't think he ever asked me, where do I want to go from here?
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I would have to say, you know, at heart, you know, obviously I'm an engineer, and I got into chip design. That was one area that I kind of fell in love with. And I guess the best way to say it is I'm looking for that opportunity to meet that visionary that needs a good chip designer.
Did you, you came to our event and we had invested into a chip company. Did you end up meeting those people?
I did.
Azimuth?
Yeah. I did.
Okay. Yes, excellent deal, guys.
Yeah. Great guys.
Yeah.
Interesting. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. What do you think of the company?
Pretty special.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. That's what we were thinking too when we invested.
Yeah. Pretty special company.
Okay.
And okay. I like your other endeavor as far as transportation.
Oh, the Plano too. The we have a replica. Anybody who's watching this, we have this prototype, I guess it would be called, or a model of a mode of transportation that is like half helicopter, half airplane. Yeah, it's called Plano, and we're bringing them here from South Korea to open up their headquarters in the United States. So they're going to be a special company, and it looks like they're going to open up shop here in Sacramento. So we will continue to make introductions for you as especially where we see you as a good fit. Okay, so have you have the last word too. Words of wisdom or advice to somebody who is on their way to doing some of the things that you've done, and maybe to help share wisdom about maybe ideas on how they can help them succeed in their journey.
Yeah, well, I think as an entrepreneur, there's a lot of door shutting. You know, the best advice I could give to anybody, if you're passionate about it, don't stop. You know, and I'm sure you've heard that before, but, you know, I think a lot of doors close before a good door opens. You know, you got to grow a little thick skin there, but they do open, and it's very rewarding. I love being an entrepreneur and coming up with new ideas, and where else can you do that? You know, I tip my hat to those people, and without it, we wouldn't have things like AI or some of these great technology breakthroughs if we didn't have entrepreneurs out there coming up with new ideas to move the ball.
James Kubel, founder of JK Engineering and Electric. An inspiration to me for sure. I'm sure other people watching are really going to gain some new insights into to the way that you operate and the way that you think. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's been great meeting all of you guys. This is pretty awesome.
Thank you. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you, we're never below you, always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.